So the reason why it has that structure is the following. Here I have the original geometrical form. So if I take a point here, which interacts with these two points here, here's the one next to it in x, and here's the one next to it in y, then I need to form a vector. I'm solving for a vector which has got values defined at these grid points. So naturally, this vector has two indices, I and j, or I sub x and I sub y. Then I need to, in order to write a matrix equation, I need to convert that two-index formulation into a one-index formulation. Because a vector, this is going to become, this is why it's a little confusing. This two-dimensional, this thing, which is the unknowns on these points, is naturally defined geometrically in two dimensions. When you write it as a matrix, it becomes a vector, because the size of the matrix is nx times ny. So I need to convert this thing with two indices into a vector, which I do by saying this is the first element of the vector, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth, 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th, and so on. So I just enumerate the points. And I can do it in any way. I can go along the rows or along the columns, and I can do it, like that, or I can do as I did, come back to the beginning. There are endless ways of converting, of converting something with two or more indices into something with one index. The simplest way gives you the zero structure we discussed, because when I go along these rows in the way I just illustrated, I start with this point. The next point I reach is the point which is 1 over an x, but that's linked to it in the differential operator, because that's the rightmost neighbor. So this corresponds, so this is the diagonal point in the differential operator. This then is the one that corresponds to the minus a quarter above the diagonal. Then we have 1, 2, 3, 4 zeros, because those points aren't involved. Then we pop down here to the one below it in y. That's related to it, so we get a non-zero value. Then the rest of the points are zero. So you can see that in general, you will always get a diagonal, a value next to it, the two tri-diagonal, two diagonals next to the main diagonal will be non-zero. Then you will move over nx minus 2 or n minus y minus 2, if you choose to label it the other way, for zeros. You'll get another non-zero value, and then the rest is zero. So that follows that just follows from the fact that I converted something which was nearest neighbor in x and y, and I converted it into a one-dimensional formulation to be able to write it as a matrix. Now, there are some other ways of writing it. So you can write it in other which correspond to different ways of mapping these values defined on the grid into a vector. So there are so-called which. And it is not obvious that the way I described is the best. And so that if you read the work of, say, Sanjay Ranker's students, they used to work on, and they presumably still do, on space-filling curves, which are nifty ways. See, this is sort of crude to keep going along rows and just go along rows. Space-filling curves are ingenious curves which wander through space and preserve locality. But there is no good way of doing it. There is no curve that sort of wanders through space in such a way that it touches all the neighbors and keeps all neighbors next to all neighbors. There's some presumably neat piece of mathematics that shows that that's impossible. So you are unable to preserve locality. When you can grow from two dimensions to one dimension, it is not possible to preserve that locality. If you could, it would make life enormously easier and make the solution of these equations much easier to do. So you can change the locality, but you can't make it local. You're always going to get this band which is far away, nx minus 1. When I do three dimensions, you can see I'm going to have two outlying bands, one corresponding to the neighbor. If I now go in three dimensions, I'm going to have some points up there. I'm not going to get to the point that differs by 1 and z until I've run through all the points in this plane. So in three dimensions, I'm going to have a band which is nx away, and then another band which is nx times ny away. So three dimensions are even worse. They'll have a very far out band. But there is nothing one can do about that. So when you read the discussions of linear algebra, they will always talk about sparse matrices. And they will discuss them, in fact, they should discuss them with great vigor, because the most important matrices in the world are always sparse. And the reason they're always sparse is, well, all the matrices that come from differential equations, at least partial differential equations, are always sparse. Because partial differential equations have these differential operators in them, the differential operators are local in x, y, and z. When you discretize those operators, convert them into a matrix equation, you're bound to get a sparse matrix. Now, there are various other, if you look at other types of problems, you will find other sparse matrices. And in general, the statement is, if you wish to do the most beautiful and solid work, and the easiest, well, in some sense the easiest in terms of neat mathematics per unit time work, you'd like to have full matrices. These are matrices where everything is non-zero. The parallel algorithms and the numerical analysis for full matrices are much simpler than the parallel algorithms and numerical analysis for sparse matrices. But sparse matrices are by far the most important and dominate numerical methods. Okay.